Shabbat Shalom. Summertime is fun time in America. Most kids are out of school. Most kids, I hear there's this tracking system here in Los Angeles, so most kids are out of school. Most families take vacations. It's the best time of the year. So it's hard to take all of this joy and happiness that we feel in the summer and throw it out the window and feel sad because it's Tisha B'Av. How can we think about how terrible the destruction of the temple was when we're sunbathing on the beach? How can we even think about the amount of effort it would take to rebuild the temple when we just got on vacation? This is the final Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. We're about to experience the saddest day in the Jewish year. And we have to understand that the destruction of the temple was a tragedy on the scale of the Holocaust. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews, of Israelites, were killed in the rebellion that led up to the destruction. Jewish sovereignty ended. The Jewish religion practically died. It would take the rabbis decades, maybe even a century, to rebuild and recreate Judaism as a religion that could exist without the temple. This period of time that we're in now, between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, is known as Ben HaMetzarim, which means in the narrow straits. And I think that there's two reasons why the rabbis call this period Ben HaMetzarim. One is because the people of Jerusalem were under siege. They were literally in dire straits. They were under siege by the most powerful army in the world at the time. And they basically had two bad options. They could try and fight the Roman army, or they could surrender, which at best would simply mean the end of Jewish autonomy, but at worst would have meant slavery and probably death to a lot of Jews. But I think there's also a metaphorical meaning to Ben HaMetzarim. Because after the temple was destroyed and Tisha B'Av became this national day of Jewish mourning, that's when the rabbis came up with this name. And I think it's because when we're in mourning, we feel like we're in a narrow place. We're closed off from the world. When our pain is so great, we can't see beyond ourselves. When there's such a tragedy, all we can deal with is our own needs. So our world contracts and it becomes very narrow. The rabbis wanted to understand why God would allow such a horrific thing to happen. And they wanted to find an answer that would work with their theology and would work with their worldview. They would never say, and they could never say, that this is the act of an evil God or a cruel God. Because that would be blasphemy. They believed in a fundamentally good God. But they also believed in a God of justice, a God who rewarded and a God who punished. Not as a way, and they were searching for this answer, not as a way to blame the victim. The rabbis would never say, so-and-so had it coming. But they were looking for a way to improve their own lives. They really wanted to improve themselves so that they could be better servants of God. So they looked inward. They looked into their own souls. And they looked at the history. They looked at the people who were living right before the destruction of the temple. And they found their answer. In their own day and age, the Jewish people were simply not united. After the destruction, Jews were spread out across the known world. And there was nothing that unified them. In Jerusalem, right before the destruction, even then, even under siege by the Roman army, the Jews were not united. There were different factions in the city, and they were fighting amongst themselves while they were under siege. There was one side that said, let's wait it out, and let's see if we can tire out the Romans, and we'll cut a deal, and we'll spare the people, and we'll spare the temple. And there was another side that said, the zealots, that said, no, let's fight to the death. I'm tired of Roman tyranny. Now, Jerusalem, you should know, as a fortress, could have held out. It had a strong wall. It had its own water source, a natural spring. And the Talmud tells us it had storehouses full of grain and full of firewood, could have lasted for 21 years. But the zealots, they wanted to fight. So they forced the hand of every resident of Jerusalem. The Talmud tells us they burned the storehouses of food. So what was left? Starve or fight? And I think we all know how the story ends. And this is the reason the rabbis latched onto for the destruction of the temple. Sinat chinam, senseless hatred. Jews hating Jews for no good reason. It's okay to hate someone if somebody did something terrible to you. That's a very natural reaction. But here was a Jew hating Jew saying, I'm a zealot and he's a Pharisee and I just hate him. He's my enemy. And that's why God took God's presence out of the temple and let it be destroyed. So the rabbis looked at history, but they were also looking deep into their own souls, and they came out with this very powerful message about the danger of hatred. And in mourning, we look inward, and we look into our own souls. On this day of national mourning, on Tisha B'Av, we're going to gather as a community, but we're really alone. Because when we come into the shul, we're all mourners, so we're not supposed to greet each other. We're not even supposed to say hello. We're supposed to come in, we sit on the floor, we read this terrible story of the destruction of Jerusalem and of the slaughter of all these Jews. We sing sad songs, and we're just supposed to wallow in it. We're just supposed to feel sad because so many terrible things have happened to the Jewish people. It's just a tragedy. But then what happens the next day? If you go about your business as if nothing else has happened, then you've missed the point. The rabbis are teaching us here a powerful lesson about pain and suffering. Just like when we mourn a loved one, first we sit Shiva, and we're paralyzed by the grief. And if we're not paralyzed, then the rabbis have us act as if we're paralyzed. We stay at home. We don't leave the house for a week. We sit on the floor. We don't shave. We don't shower. We don't greet people. But then the rabbi said, Shiva ends, and you have to re-enter the world. You have to leave your house, and you have to re-enter it differently. When the rabbis were searching for this understanding of why God would allow the destruction of the temple, they were searching for the most basic fundamental human need, which is to give meaning to suffering. Now, this is very powerful, but it's also very dangerous, because we shouldn't be so presumptuous as to tell somebody else we know why they're suffering. We should never tell someone, oh, you're having this tragedy in your life? Let me tell you why. We should support people who are looking to find meaning in their suffering, who are looking to make their own meaning out of their own tragedy. But we should never tell someone else, I know why you are suffering. So when we mourn the destruction of the temple, when we turn inwards, on Tisha B'Av, that's the natural thing to do. But then as soon as Tisha B'Av ends, we turn outwards and we start looking up. The tikkun, the reparative act for the destruction of the temple, is to look outwards. This Shabbat is Shabbat Chazon. It's called Shabbat Chazon after the first word of the Haftarah. Chazon means vision. Isaiah's vision. What is your vision? What kind of a world can you imagine living in? Now granted, this is not a Haftarah of a prophecy of utopia. This is a Haftarah of rebuke. Isaiah is admonishing the people. But what is Isaiah's rebuke? This is not kind of the typical fare that the Jews are not worshiping God, they're ignoring God and they're worshiping idols. They're not ignoring the temple. In fact, they're doing the exact opposite. All they're doing is bringing sacrifices. And Isaiah has come to tell them, God says, enough. Isaiah says to them, "Bayomer Adonai, Savati Olot Elim." God says, I've had my fill of burnt offerings of rams. The people are looking for an inward answer. Their life is not going well, so they bring more sacrifices. But Isaiah has come to tell them that they're looking in the wrong place. They're looking inward when they need to look outward. In verse 17, Isaiah says, Limdu heitev, learn to do good. Dershu mishpat, devote yourselves to justice. Ashru chamotz, aid the wronged. Shiftu yatom, uphold the rights of the orphaned. Rivu almana, defend the cause of the widow. Why does Isaiah use these metaphors of the orphan and the widow? Because these were the people who are on the periphery of society. They're not full citizens. They don't have a say about their future. They're dependent upon others to argue for their cause. They are the voiceless. Who are the voiceless today? What concerns do you have that you've never given a voice to? How many times have you said to yourself, you've seen something happen and you say, that's terrible. Something should be done about that. Now is the time for us to give a voice to those voiceless concerns. Just last week, we recounted how the daughters of Tzofchad stood up to God and to Moshe, and they gave voice to their concern. They demanded their inheritance from their father. And what's God's initial reaction? Ken benot Tzofchad dovrot, which the Chumash translates as the plea of the daughters of Tzofchad is just. But a real literal translation is the daughters of Tzofchad are speaking. They're speaking. They have a voice. God is saying it's okay. They're giving a voice to their voiceless concerns. They were giving a voice to the voiceless concerns of all biblical women. Now, how presumptuous of them. Women speaking up in biblical times. But God justifies them, and God rewards their courage. We have to have that same courage. It's our turn to start having that courage and to start creating the future that we want. And when we give a voice to our voiceless concerns, that's how we rebuild the temple. I have many Orthodox friends and colleagues, and every once in a while when we talk, we get around to the subject of the temple, and they ask me if I pray for the rebuilding of the temple. And I honestly tell them that I do. But then, of course, I have to tell them, well, it's probably not the same temple that you're praying for to be rebuilt. Because I'm not praying for a physical edifice to be rebuilt so we can get back to sacrifices. To me, the temple is a symbol of Jewish unity. And it's a symbol, indeed, of universal unity. As Isaiah is later going to prophesy, Ki beiti beit tfila yikare lechol ha'amim. My house shall be a house of prayer for all nations. For me, a rebuilt temple is predicated upon Jewish unity. I mean, how else could we rebuild the temple if all the Jewish people were not united in that cause? And then once we're united, then we can be an Or LaGoyim. Then we can be a light unto the nations. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. How do we do the rebuilding? How do we build the bricks and the mortar of this temple? Well, the bricks and the mortar are us. They're people. Yes, on one level, the temple is purely symbolic. It's a replacement for Mount Sinai. Because we don't know where Mount Sinai is, and we can't go back there again. We can't experience revelation again like the Jewish people did at Mount Sinai. So we have the temple, and at the temple we can go and have an experience of God again and again. But on another level, the temple isn't symbolic at all. The temple is us. We can build structures, we can build buildings, but they're dead. It's the people who fill them that make them alive. The temple that we rebuild is not just going to be a structure. The temple that we rebuild is going to be the fulfillment of our hopes and our dreams. The temple that we rebuild is our vision of the future. The temple that you're sitting in now, Sinai Temple, is a stepping stone to the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. Sinai Temple has to embody our highest ideals. Sinai Temple has to be a place where we can fulfill our hopes and our dreams. And that begins with you. To paraphrase the late President Kennedy, ask not what your shul can do for you. but what you can do for your shul. When we see our community, when we see our shul as the vehicle to help people fulfill their highest ideals and their highest hopes and dreams, then we'll truly be on the path to redemption. And the temple will be rebuilt speedily and in our days. Shabbat Shalom.